This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Ms. Barbia Williams, founder and director of Barbia Williams Performing Company. Welcome, Ms. Williams.
Hi, how are you doing? Hope Tap, I should say. I come in peace. That's a very important salutation to me from the ancient Kemetic, or as some people would say, the ancient Egyptian greeting.
Ms. Barbia, you are such an icon in this community. You have been a leader in the field of African and African-American arts and culture. I'm hoping you can tell us a little bit about the formation of your brand, your professional life since arrival in Tucson in the 70s. But first, would you like to tell us about Kwanzaa Voyages?
I would love to tell you about Kwanzaa Voyages. It's a compilation of just wonderful energy and aesthetics and education and sharing of knowledge and people and greetings. And I'm just real excited about it. We have people coming in from all over the state that are going to join me. That's why I call it Barbia and Friends. We have dance and we have drum. Mr. Rasul will come in from the Songhai Drummers. He will be there with not only my grandson, Tavian, but one of our drummers, Roosevelt Ski Smith, that has been with us for many, many years. They're going to really just, rev things up. We're taking us on a journey, a voyage, very much like Abubakar out of the old Malian Empire. We'll be sharing dance from the Bambara people and Shekere, some of the music, and we'll talk about some of the great contributions, but we're also going to have other voyages. Harriet's Voyage. Harriet Tubman has always been a very important person in my own life. There's been this rekindling of her spirit and her energy, her tenacity with the latest movie that came out. We've got some people that are going to talk about the songs that she would have heard along the way. We've got Ida Ream, a woman that I had a really wonderful opportunity just to hear actually recently at a reading over at the U of A. She's going to lead us in some songs, follow the drinking gourd, go down Moses, and teach and share. There's another song called Ella's Song by Sweet Honey in the Rock that they talk about, Ella Baker talks about, until the killing of young black men's son becomes as important as the killing of white men's sons. We're going to share this with the community because we're at that time in history and there need to be a lot of voices heard. And I can't think of anybody, and especially she's a woman, and a black woman, a woman of African descent here in America that really paved a way for us. So we're going to really use, and when I say use, that's totally with permission from her, because I have spoken with Miss Harriet and I asked her, is it all right? And she said, go for it. She said, we're on a run here. We're going to run. We're going to walk. We're going to make sure that our energy is explosive with this Kwanzaa Voyages. We also have workshops, real exciting. There's a woman that is just an amazing hairstylist that works with natural hair. She's out of Tempe, Hairstyles by Deshauna. She's coming down. I have to be, just have to kind of acknowledge her, because she was, telling us how to work with our hair and how to really care for it in a wonderful, a natural, nurturing way. And my daughter, Bia, also, she's an esthetician. And also we have Dr. Omari, who has been just a mainstay. She's our elder that we have asked to present the Kwanzaa presentation. Then we also have vendors, people, again, I say they're coming from all over the state of Arizona, which is really exciting. We celebrate Kwanzaa in a very public way, Saturday, December the 7th at the BWPC studios. And, anybody and everyone is welcome to come and have an understanding about Kwanzaa. But during the actual celebration of Kwanzaa, we spend time with our immediate family and friends, and we talk about, those family things, that it's important that you just don't want other people that, don't have that sense of your family and your immediate needs and conversations that you need to have. So we'll have those also during the official December the 26th through January the 1st.
Kwanzaa was originally celebrated in 1966 as a specifically African-American holiday, culminating sometimes in gift-giving and feasting. You talked to us about how parts of it can be shared with a larger community, parts of it can be really intimate, just family. Since you've been in Tucson since the 70s, how have you seen the way Tucson celebrates Kwanzaa change over the years?
Well, I started celebrating Kwanzaa in 1967 in Chicago with the Institute of Positive Education, Hakeem Mahabuti, Third World Press, and just other people in our community, poets, playwrights, Eugene Perkins. And I remember, because Chicago has a very prominent, identifiable Black community, this is where we were. And this, you know, that's the way we celebrated Kwanzaa. It was just, you know, it was Black people beginning to reclaim our own culture, which was, you know, just violently taken away from us for many, many years in many, many different aspects. So this was a way to come and just you know, relax. Maulana Karinga, Dr. Karinga, I had actually met him when I was a student at Southern Illinois University, and as Ron Karinga, and was with the Black Student Union. Then we went down to Cairo, Illinois, which was which was a whole nother conversation to talk about when you know they were police with double barrel shotguns and flat feet and on every corner as we marched down the street there. I'll never forget that experience. And Kwanzaa was very special to me. And so it was something that, like the rest of your roots, that you are able to, and traditions that you're able to bring with you, the knowledge, the songs, the rhythms, the spirit of the people and the community. And we would celebrate for 7 nights at each somebody's house each night, starting with, you know, Umoja, with unity. And then we'd all come together and, you know, everybody, and then we would come together. The seventh day is the Karamu Ya Imani, the Feast of Faith. And that was, of course, our biggest day where we would come together. And again, you had mentioned earlier about the exchange of the gifts, the Watotos, or the children, during those days that we would meet, we would begin to construct and create these gifts. The Zawadis is what we call the gifts. And that was very important because one of the commitments that Dr. Karinga asked us about in terms of celebrating Kwanzaa is that we give not only a book was really important, so that, you know, we build our libraries, we build our knowledge, you know, in our minds, again, our hearts, our culture and our people to our children. But we have these libraries that we begin to, lay that foundation for who we are in recapturing our culture. But we would also make things. And that's one of the things that we're going to also have as a part of our Kwanzaa Voyages, is every aspect of what we're doing in Kwanzaa Voyages has some kind of educational value. And I say that because we're playing games from the continent, from the motherland, games from the plantation period that I was really blessed. I think most of us know Dr. Jim Griffith from Tucson, Meet Yourself. Well, when he was the head of the Southwest Folklife Alliance, I was a student at the University of Arizona, and he brought in a woman who I at that time, I thought it was kind of corny because, you know, you're this, you know, hip young student, right? And but I began to understand, and I couldn't leave the workshops. Her name was Bessie Jones. She was from the Georgia Sea Islands, and she not only sang about Daniel and the lion's den and took me back home to Chicago in those good old days, but But she also talked to us about the plantation period and Nana Thread the Needle and Josephine and Draw Me a Bucket of Water. And her and the other people that were with us, that were with her and the Georgia Sea Island Singers, myself and James Simmons, an attorney now in Los Angeles, he was there, the two of us were there. And I tell you, it was something that I was just really thankful that I was able to partake in that and gain so much knowledge, because, of course, it's a door that opens. You know, it's a seed that's planted.
Ms. Williams, who would you especially like to see at Kwanzaa Voyages on December 7?
I would especially like to see people from our youth, you know, the Black community, the African community. I definitely would like to see us come out, not only to share and gain knowledge, but to, again, to begin to feel that sense of unity in terms of who we are as people of African descent. Not only those of us born here in America, but those of us that have come to America as refugees. But I would really like to see that first and foremost, because that's what Kwanzaa is about. It's an African-American cultural tradition that has no religious affiliation. It's purely social and cultural and educational. You know, the Tucson Black community needs to have some kind of seed and something that is going to help us heal. You know, we haven't gotten past that healing point. We're now just beginning to, I think, after so many years from my experience being here and, you know, in the early 70s coming into Tucson, I mean, it was a culture shock. I just didn't know where I was. And it was very different coming out of, you know, the very powerful, very profound movement of the South Side of Chicago. And even in Carbondale, Illinois at SIU, I mean, it was just, we knew who we were. We were, you know, we were wearing our hair natural. We were beginning to identify ourselves and re-identify ourselves, I have to say, because you carry it with you. It's that agungun spirit, they say, in Africa. There's that spirit that I know that came with us on those slave ships that allowed us to, like Ayana Van Zant says, you know, we're the children and the descendants of those that chose to survive, our ancestral spirit that has come with us, that has stayed with us, that reminds us that we have to find a point in time to come together and accept ourselves as we've accepted other people and things that have happened to us historically, that we have to also accept ourselves. And of course, everybody else is welcome. I wouldn't open it to the public. I wouldn't be sitting here if the healing is important in a lot of different ways. But the priority is definitely with people of African descent.
Ms. Williams, being that you have had this experience, being able to compare the South Side of Chicago in the 70s to a very disparate cultural scene in Tucson, where there were important community centers, important meeting points, important events, but maybe a lack of cohesion that you would have wanted to see when you got here. Where do you think we are now? Where do you think the African American community in Tucson is right now in terms of what you say, this goal of having unity, being together, self-affirming, and feeling like a voice in the greater community while being a rather small minority?
Well, I always differ to use the word minority when I think of people of Black folks, people of African descent. We are people of color. We are a small percentage here in the state of Arizona, but it doesn't make us any less powerful. I think that on many levels, there's the I Am a Cat that I've worked with over the last few years. That's the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance. They have a community action team that has brought together various domains that gives us various voices that need to hear around education, around religion around art and culture, which is the domain that I had, and definitely look forward to doing something in February the 17th at our first of the 2020 to open up our new decade there. But when I first came to Tucson, I was in culture shock, and I gravitated towards the I was really fortunate to have to establish residency here so that I could, you know, get back onto the university. But I found Bill Lewis and Barclay Goldsmith at Pima Community College in the drama department there. And both of those men were very, very instrumental in creating a foundation for BWPC, Lijinbu at that time. But Bill Lewis, he established the Ododo Theater, which was just an amazing time of growth. You know, there was the River Niger. I opened it up. Bill Lewis, of course, was our founder and artistic director when we first started. And then Roger Carter came in, I was the third, and at this point, the third artistic director for Ododo Theater. I always want to just leave it a little open because I always feel like somebody should come in and take over. It's not gone. I have a lot of artifacts and trying to archive them now so that we can pass them on to that next generation. But I opened Ododo Theater with an Afro-Cuban mystery play called Shango de Ima by Pepe Carril. And it was just really powerful. We had all of our drummers, you know, Ed and Willie and Sean, and Willie and Sean were the co-founders of Lijinbu Dance and Drum Ensemble, which was the first name of our company after when we were over there at Parks and Rec, which is where we was our physical location. I was asked to teach dance there, and The Chicano community was very powerful at that time for me. And that power was something that was resonating with me that from, again, coming out of Chicago, Chi-Town, that you know, I'm brown and I'm proud, and I'm, you know, I'm redefining who I am as a Chicano. And Barclay Goldsmith was very instrumental in with the Teatro Carmen, Teatro Libertad. There was three teatros that we worked with.
Fronterizo,
exactly. Well, that was the main one I worked with, the Borderlands Theater, right? Teatro Fronterizo, thank you. It gave us opportunities. And again, it really made me understand and have that parallel of cultures of people that were... you know, you have different struggles, but they're very parallel in terms of what you're saying, what we all want. But it was interesting. I remember very much being, you know, really having an understanding because, you know, when I came here, I didn't understand. I didn't really know the difference between the indigenous people here and the Mexicanos, you know, as I would say. And it really allowed me to, you know, just one of my sister's friends was a Tohono woman. She's gone now. She's an ancestor now. But she, you know, like her and she was my babysitter. And these were people that you got to know and you really began to understand the land of the people that we were living in on and our daily lives and how they that interaction, the intersection of people, and so it was an extreme growth and a welcoming sense of knowledge for me. I mean, I just recently was in Nogales at the border, and again, it's always important to remind yourself of struggles, not only. You know, the museum had, of course, you know, when you go right after Días de los Muertos, you really, I mean, the walls of this museum were just amazing. It was just, I could not believe what I was seeing and witnessing. And of course, along the border to, you know, the wire is really there. The struggle is there. The squalor of people, you know, just along the border that are just really fighting for their lives. It just reminds you of that constant struggle. And it's just knowing that we have to keep on keeping on, mm-hmm. you know, and stand up, like Harriet says again. You know, I'm like Harriet in that way, and not to dishonor her in any way and her greatness. You know, she says that they said that the last words that she said was that I go to prepare a place for you. Well, I'm still preparing that place, and we really want to see people come out because it's definitely about our youth and about what we're doing, what we're still doing here, and what we're still being allowed to do. Again, we want to thank the Arts Foundation of Tucson and Southern Arizona for this mini grant. It's definitely helped us to bring in, you know, our supplies and materials for this project, but it's also, you know, helped us to reach out to other people so that we can have artists of a very high quality that we're bringing in alongside myself, culminating this 400-year, 1619 to 2019, this 400-year commemoration. We're culminating it in December the 7th from 9 to 5. And we're taking it out in a real way because 2020, there's another vision. We have our third annual step show that we're going to be bringing in that's, you know, it's called 2020 Vision, Our Blackness, Our Heritage. We're going to be at Cholla High School again February the 8th. It's a Saturday evening, late afternoon evening. And we're bringing it in with a new vision, the United Nations has declared from 2015 to 2024 the decade of people of African descent. And we are using all of that and then some to really prepare for that reawakening, that re-envisioning of who we are. And this is very much a part of it. Again, Eva, I want to thank you for having this program that you've been working with for a while, and some of the people that you've brought on with this program, I think is so important to acknowledge our artists and our community.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Ms. Williams, you have just talked about the struggle. People of color in a wide way, I think, find ourselves at a pivotal moment in our country in terms of a struggle that involves everybody coming to grips with structural racism and structural inequity and how that's baked into our institutions. So having been that, we talked a little bit about that, and I've talked to other people on this show about that, you're not the first person who has mentioned to me that sometimes the most difficult people to deal with also have Black Lives Matter signs on their property.
Right.
What do you feel is missing from the consciousness of people who maybe are on one hand preoccupied with being woke, but also not understanding what their role could really be in terms of moving us forward?
I find it kind of superficial because it's like, why are you broadcasting something that you're not really doing anything about? And sometimes you get in the way. It's so superficial for me. When you're disrespectful in other ways, when you have a colonial mentality of taking over and wanting to be, it's just something that I don't want to waste time with. I don't want to waste energy with. We have a lot of work to do. The good people, let's quote that and unquote that, in their minds, you know, they're struggling to learn. They're struggling to grow. And I understand that, but you know, your struggle has gotten in and getting in my way, and my struggle's real. You can go home to, you know, your tea and crumpets, and, you know, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. You know, I think everybody should feel safe and comfortable in this world. But there's too many of us that are dealing with too much of the discrepancies of, you know, who we are. Something just recently, somebody said, well, anybody should be able to identify as Black. Well, your skin color doesn't allow you to identify as Black. I don't care how much you tan, you know, how much you, you know, frizz your hair. It's just, you know, right now, you know, we need funding in our community. We need support. We need to empower ourselves, you know, for us, by us, about us. And we need people to get out of the way of that. There's a lot of people in our community that think they're doing the right things, that want to harass you. And I mean that. This is stuff I go through, that want to harass you, that want to take over, you know, and be in your face and, you know, and not discipline their own, and they're not disciplining their own selves about, you know, who they are, what their job is, what they're supposed to be trained in and degreed in. And they want to come in your face with things. So, and, you know, there's a lot of that that goes on. Black Lives Matter. It's not like we don't need allies in our being, but, you know, you need to help when a lot of times it's like, I know where my help is needed. I know where we need to go. I listen to people and our culture and I see, and all you have to really be is observant sometimes. And how do we pull it together? You know, we still have our mainstay organizations. There are a lot of wonderful people that are working on spoken word. There's a, you know, what I call our speakeasy, the hole in the wall place, Hush, that, you know, brings people together to do poetry. Matt Kearney is doing some wonderful things that's bringing people together on addressing some of the ills that we're having to deal with, the social ills that we're having to being consistently confronted with. So, and there's a young woman that I have to mention she calls her act. Her name is called Just Jima, and Najima is Rainey. Was one of my children that I, in my dance classes when she was a child, but her father was one of our original drummers, Norwood Rainey, along with Ed Good, and again, Talivu Jadi, Ralph Drew at that time was his name. But her mother, the phenomenal Lola Rainey, who's doing her tales. Najima's also going to be there singing some of our songs. This young woman really needs to get a platform and get on the map, because she is, I've seen her and heard her twice singing, but she's going to be at our Kwanzaa Voyages. You all have got to go to Facebook. We're on Facebook under Kwanzaa Voyages 2019, Najima Rainey. But Lola wrote a book, a short story called The Lajinbu, and that's what it was about. That's where our original name comes from, the tale of the Lajinbu, who was this powerful gazelle, you know, antelope deer, female deer that was just so powerful. You see that in the African community. She was very fertile, and she brought life about, and that's what Lajinbu was about, our original name. Our board members at that time, Pauletta Jeffries and Dolores Batty, Dr. Batty, who's still here around at the U of A. And it was Dolores's really idea. She says, Barbia, she says, people relate you and identify you as Ododo Theater. She says, you do not, you know, that transition into Barbia Williams Performing Company, using your names, your name as does Catherine Dunham, you know, who laid the foundation for, you know, the dance and the scholarship that we work with around our dance in terms of teaching and learning and growing. But Martha Graham and, you know, just all of the modern dance pioneers, they use their names. And she says, you know, Arthur Mitchell, Alvin Ailey, she says, it's so important that you give your name to it. And I'm like, you know, look, I'm not sure that's something, but I really understood what she said in terms of maintaining that your audience, you know, people know who to contact.
Could you say a little bit more, Ms. Williams, about how you started Barbia Williams Performing Company and speak perhaps to its longevity? Because there have been lots of dance and performing companies that have not been able to withstand the years the way your company has.
Well, again, we started at Parks and Recreations. I was asked to go and teach. I was in classes at that point with a few friends, the two Rebeccas and Olivia Rojo Razzanetti. We were all in dance classes down at Oddfellows Hall downtown over here on 6th Avenue, about two blocks from where we are now. And we were dancing, and someone, Elaine Fuller asked me to teach a class. And there was also a woman named Barbara Greenberg-Gatek that was doing a class at that time. She was calling it Afro-Cuban. But I had a wonderful class. I had like 60-some-odd students. It was feeling really good. And I was like, well, where are the black people, you know? And so they sent me over to Santa Rosa Center. I met two young men, Daryl Sean Chapel and Willie Ray Bell. It was an immediate, more than clicking, it was this immediate like glue that put us together. And we were the foundations. I just recently, found some photos of us back then, from back in the day. That was just amazing photos. That's what started it. And what kept us together again was our passion. We really wanted to dance. And we had people that were beginning to accept us in terms of the African dance that we did. You know, a lot of it, you know, we had to work other jobs. Many other jobs to, I worked at a restaurant, I was a waitress, and everybody worked. I mean, Sean was the youngest one, and, you know, his parents supported, his mama supported him and sisters, but everybody, and Willie worked at some other odd jobs too. But we'd end up rehearsing at 10 o'clock at night. Our confidence in ourselves and our own self-esteem that we understood, and the importance of who we were and what we were doing. It was just, people provided opportunities for us. Tucson Urban League was very instrumental in helping us get young people involved in our programming over the years. We were at the Northwest Neighborhood Center, that whole Sugar Hill area. That's where I was living around the time. We started off on the east side, but I had to find Sugar Hill, right? And that was the place that one of my sisters and I decided to live. And again, it was the people, and the churches. I Gloria Musgrove, I think about, you know, Looking Black, and there were radio programs that I'm sure were founded by here or promoted here by KXCI, right? That over the years, Grover Banks, these were people that were also giving in our community. Pima Community College was, you know, another very instrumental in, because I began to work there. You know, again, I say opportunities. I realized that I have worn too many hats over the years. The community at this point really needs to step up. There have been some people, like I said, my daughter is our CFO now, our chief financial officer, and she's starting to finally do, you know, some of the fundraising. I mean, you can't do it all, Barbia. And it's never been about the money. And yes, we definitely need, as a 501c3, it's really been about who can you touch, who can you, and again, you know, I've been really fortunate to work with so many people. I love going into Monzo and to Davis Bilingual Learning Center and to Ochoa. These were just schools that just resonated with my heart.
Ms. Barbia Williams, thank you so much for honoring us with your presence today.
Thank you.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.